Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still. Where nature is harsh and demanding. Where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Yes, you do. You go into the wonderful world of Australian film, which is what we're doing here on 3CR at Showreel. That's our shtick. And today we are celebrating the fact that the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival has started in cinema at the Nova. It started on Tuesday. It started off with the wonderful film called Whoopee Blues, which is a celebration of the Conway brothers. Their first incarnation is the Captain Whoopee Band, followed by their two divergent careers, equally fascinating and equally interesting. A full house. Today I'm going to tell you about a couple of films that are on tonight, actually. One called Hot Water, Investigating Australia's Marine Ecology Ecosystem. That's the film I actually spoke to a director, but it's coupled with a fantastic film as well called Lifeblood, the Madawa. That's the Fitzroy River, and it is absolutely glorious film. So if you've got a chance to go to the movies tonight and you want to see a glorious celebration of country, you couldn't be better served. That's tonight at 6:15 p.m. at the Nova. So we'll start off straight away with this conversation I had with Tim, Tim, his name is, where is it? Ah, here it is, Wybrow. That's why I found it such a hard name to remember, because it's so easy to see when you look at it. Tim Wybrow. He's a very excitable fellow who's very interested in investigating community, the ecosystem, Australian ecosystems, and how it can actually be affected in a positive way by all of us. So here we go. This is my chat with Tim.
What is a really large passion project of mine. Pre-production was about a year in total before getting off the ground and getting into production. But it really stems from a backing of being surrounded by the marine environment. And here in Australia, obviously, you know, we're girt by sea. And I've spent a lot of my time and my childhood diving, fishing and recreating with our marine ecosystems. And over those years, I have seen the changes that are in place. So I really wanted to bring to the forefront in an appealing documentary, educating everybody about the system changes that we have at place with rising water acidity and what's happening as well to contribute to that rising water acidity across the globe and here in Australia, whilst also educating the audience on the small, subtle changes that we can all make by supporting particular seafoods or avoiding plastic bottles that will then benefit the overall health of the marine ecosystem.
One of the most interesting things about your approach is, of course, to start off as a concerned citizen. Like most of the people who will be watching the film, I mean, you had questions. How did you get the answers, I mean, to make the script?
So there was a lot of research involved in it just to understand exactly what's happening with our rising water acidity. But in Australia, we have some really fantastic, passionate citizen scientists and also, you know, marine environmental scientists that provided some fantastic information for me, and also ended up featuring in the documentary. So by reaching out to those people, having those initial discussions, it was a great form of educating myself to understand some of the topics that we'll cover.
Yeah, which is a great way to go, isn't it? To, because you're taking people by the hand and showing them that this is an issue that they need to be worried about, but this is how they can actually have some positive impact.
That's it. And I think for a lot of people, when we do talk about conservation or, you know, global warming, everyone just thinks it's all too hard and it's too big of a problem to be solved. But it can be solved and it can be reversed by everybody banding together. And first of all, voting with our money, whether that be supporting particular species like the long-spine sea urchin or oysters, or just making those subtle changes, as I've briefly discussed.
Well, it was fascinating to see the litter pickers, as it were, because my daughter had a similar experience. She goes litter picking with her little kid, who's only 2.5. He now is a litter picker supremo.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to embed that into our younger generation. I think more and more that this topic is discussed, people are starting to see conservation and citizen science as a really fun, passionate thing to be a part of. You know, it's almost becoming cool to think about the environment and think about our future. And as the generation above, you just want to ensure that people can have the same experience as what we've had interacting with our environment into the future. So I think embedding those things early on to the younger generation and teaching them those traits is really powerful.
One of the things that's most compelling about your documentary, Hot Water, is that you take us to a very local and knowable environment. So, for example, the Port Phillip Bay, or where the man was looking for microplastics.
Yes, on the Patterson River, yeah.
Yeah. Now, these are very local. I mean, they're local to me, in fact. So yes. I found it absolutely fascinating to have someone talk about something rather, it's not over there, it's here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've all seen some of the things that are happening overseas and the cleanup efforts that are happening in Indonesia or Bali, for instance, but third world problems that are happening right here on Australia's doorstep. For that particular sequence, we've got sewage that's leaking out. We've got microplastics that are leaking out from factory runoff from being swept down onto the floor into the Paterson River without filtration systems. It's a Stone Age practice and it really needs to be addressed. And when you look at what's happening down the food chain and down the line, all of these microplastics are really going back into our own food chain. So microplastics are being released from the factory floor down the Paterson River out into Port Phillip Bay, then, you know, entering the sea by the Bass Strait. But when they are in Port Phillip Bay, we've got a magnificent snapper fishery in Victoria. What's happening to those recreational fishermen that are targeting those snapper? Where's the microplastic going? It really is being ingested by human interaction. So it's quite yeah, it's quite concerning.
Yeah, very compelling. And the other thing that's fascinating, you've already brought it up, the recreational fisher people, you actually not only bring scientists who have been researching these issues, you bring in people who love the environment that they go and play in.
That's right. And I think as a citizen scientist now, or even just a recreational fisherman, you have that automatic love for what you do. It's that reset, it's that time on the water, it's your escape from technology, and being away from all of that really helps you admire and fall in love with the environment. So you automatically, as somebody that goes out on the water consistently, if I see garbage floating, I'm picking it up because I don't want it to end up in the wrong place. I don't want it to be consumed by an animal. I don't want a whale to get stuck in that debris. But you create that fond connection by interacting with the environment. And I think more and more, the more that people recreate with our environment, they should all care and they develop that care over time.
Like you said, this was a passion project. And I know you must have brought some people along for the ride, because I looked at the credits and there are a variety of people who have involved themselves as cinematographers. You're involved in the scripting. You've obviously shot some of it. You've also edited it. And you also contribute music.
Yeah, yes, quite a diverse skill set. Which contributed to the hundreds, thousands of hours that I've put into this project. But as a commercial cinematographer full-time, having my own production company, it was great to rely on some of the resources that I do have on a daily basis. We brought in Ash Dunn, the director of photography, that assisted and provided some fantastic advice. He has had some phenomenal shows air here in Australia, including Wild Croc Territory, the Rock Lobster Men, Mount Hutt Rescue. So having his expertise to really guide me as a bit of a mentor on this project has been phenomenal, and it's helped me in the chopping block as well, in the edit suite, in making things short, concise, and making sure that we're relaying that information so it's easy for everyone to understand. This piece really should be shown in schools. It should be an educational form for everybody. The target market for this is anybody that cares, anybody that interacts with the environment, to just open their mind about what they can do on a daily basis.
The Melbourne Documentary Film Festival returns to Cinema Nova this July for Past, Present, Future. Beginning on July 15, warm up the cold winter days with a revitalising collection of local and international documentaries from independent and emerging talents. Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, a jewel in Melbourne's cultural crown. Screening from July the 15th for a limited time at Cinema Nova, 380 Lygon Street, Carlton. Cinema Nova is a 3CR supporter.
You're with Annie on Showreel, and I was just talking to Tim Wybrow about his film Hot Water, investigating Australia's marine ecosystem. It's partnered with a fantastic film called Lifeblood, the Madawa, the Fitzroy River, which is narrated by Naminya Bedford. She's a traditional owner, and the film takes us from the top of the river right to its arrival at the sea mouth. It's a fantastic film, and there's going to be a post Q&A session with filmmakers from Hot Water, as well as the Madawa, the Fitzroy River, at tonight at Nova, 6:15 p.m. And if you really want to look at a beautiful film, then I'll have to say that the Madawa, the Fitzroy River, Lifeblood is just that beautiful film. We're going to go on to another film that's on later in the evening. It's a 9:15 film, and it's called Stupa. The interview I did was with the director, Peter Downey. Peter Downey, as well as Boonga Bob, was there as well. Now, Boonga Bob is an artistic treasure from Australia, and his amazing home, a rule-breaking work of art and temple, a deeply philosophical documentary showcasing the creativity of a few out-of-the-box artists with warmth, depth and humour. What it is people who are using their homes as a place to express themselves. And it's quite fascinating film, I'll have to say. And it's local. It's extremely local. But Peter has got two films in the festival. The other is called Deep Ecology. And Deep Ecology has been grouped with a film called Pharmacy... It's called Pharmacy of Light, A Quantum Leap in Healing. So Deep Ecology is actually about the interconnectedness of our personal and collective grief with the ecological and systematic crisis engulfing our planet. So it's an exploration, and it's quite fascinating, actually. There is a thing called Deep Ecology, and that's what it's investigating. And the other film, Pharmacy of Light, A Quantum Leap in Healing, is actually about, well, there's the whole thing about light, photosynthesis being the core of science rather than molecular. So there's a whole discussion about that in the film. But part of it that's most compelling to me anyway is the urban farms that they're talking about, and it's in an American context. That's their challenge. Their challenge is to try and unravel the tyranny of processed foods and the destructive nature to the overall health of Americans, which, of course, if that happens in America, then, of course, it has ripple effects across the world. But anyway, these two films are on Tuesday, the 22nd of June, July, at 6:15. but, of course, I was speaking to the director, Peter Downey. This is a discussion I had with Peter, who was in company with Boinga Bob. This is only part of the conversation because it was really quite fascinating. And so I'll put the entire conversation on the podcast. So here we go. So we've got Peter Downey, who's the filmmaker, and we've got Boinga Bob here as well. There's two films that you've got in the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, and Boinga Bob is part of the inside story of outside art. So we'll start off with that. You say in the film that you're a self-starter when it comes to filmmaking. So tell me about how you got into the filmmaking game.
Okay, yeah. So I'm self-taught. Yeah, I didn't go to film school or anything like that, and I've never had funding or grants or anything to make my films. And how I fell into it, I was in a job I didn't like, I've been a muso and painted, and I was just in a normal job I didn't like, and I wasn't doing any art anymore, and I wasn't getting anywhere financially, And then a local permaculture group in Warburton, where I live, were like keen to get, you know, a film made about permaculture and inspired me to do that. And then, which my first film is Anima Mundi, which did really well, though I got ripped off by a US distributor because I didn't know anything about the film industry and film contracts and things like that. So, and I was able to get David Holmgren into it, who was, like the co-founder of permaculture. And I was, I was quite amazed. I never expected to get David Holmgren, as a nobody filmmaker in my doco, and that really got the ball rolling. Because once I had David in the film, then when you approach other people, you've got a name like David Holmgren in your film, it's easy to get other interviews. And so Animal Money did quite well for me. That was in 2011.
You've got a philosophical view to filmmaking.
Very much, yeah. Even in the Animal Money, the second half got quite philosophical, like getting into like the Gaia-type hypothesis and things. And then I've done one on Earth rights. That's more like law and environmental law and things like that. But these latest two films, both Stupa, The Outsider Artist, and The Deep Ecology, are both deeply philosophical films. And I didn't expect Boinga's film to turn out so, it's quite profound in many ways. It's quite deep.
But it's also quite amusing, which is a bit like you, Bob. In the sense that you're philosophical, you've made a whole life of seeking out truths, haven't you?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, so, and that's what your house is about, isn't it?
It is. I think we're all here to learn something, and I've been very inspired. The fact that I'm alive and the fact there's a whole planet full of people who don't know what they're doing here. So I've done a lot of travelling around the world with different religion and philosophy, trying to work out my own idea. The most important thing is gratitude. We all need to have gratitude. The fact that we're alive at all, the fact that we've got air to breathe and we've got doggy fins, it's all given to us. And the bodies, yeah. The bodies that we're living in, we don't own our body. The body's on loan from Mother Earth. And one day she'll take it back again, either by cremation or burial, Tibet's sky body. Mm. But the fact that we're alive at all, it's wonderful. So I've been inspired to make some architecture to symbolise the journey of life.
You're you come from an electronic. What are you? How did you make your money? You like all those telecom guys that got sacked and who are incredibly brainy.
I'm a qualified electrical engineer, and I've got a master's degree in mechanical engineering and systems engineering. And I've had a lot of inventions, things I've invented in my lifetime, things that have been used in the telecommunication industry.
Yeah, which sort of says something about your house, because you are full of confidence. You just decide you're going to do it, and you do.
Yeah, no, that's right.
That's actually very exciting to most people, because you talk about this thing about people being masters of limitation. I thought that was a fantastic quote.
That's right. Well, we should be masters of manifestation. And if you want to get to know yourself, you've got to become a master of manifestation. So this building here, it's part of my manifesting, and I'm still working on it. It's a very exciting project.
I noticed that even in the film, if we look at your house, because we see parts of it, and then it's a grand production, in fact. But you have things that you particularly like those wooden frames that you make that are like organic. Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, so as with all artists, you actually have motifs, don't you?
Yeah, they're inspired by fractals. Fractals is the thumbprint of God. The shapes, in my carvings, they're in trees and plants. That's why they look so good with the nature, because they're based on nature. Fractal architecture.
Oh, right.
Okay. And I think I've explored that more than anybody.
So, Peter, in this particular film called Stupa, you talk to Bob, Bunga Bob, but you also talk to a variety of other people as well. I mean, people are very large brains. So how do you contain it in your movie?
But that was, I've got to admit, like from when I first started filming this, I was like, God, how am I going to make a film about Bob? You know, he's so eccentric and out of the box sort of thing. And then it actually came together quite amazingly in the editing process. It was really easy the way it all just flowed. But there was a Guy Feldman, the Rainbow Temple in Rosebank in northern New South Wales. And I was blown away because him and Boinga Bob are so similar in the sense that they both built temples and without any council permits and, you know, breaking a lot of rules and things like that. But the council turned a blind eye, both him and Boinga, because it brought tourism and attracted things like that when, you know, especially way back when Warburton was a lot quieter town when Bob first began. When was that? 30 years longer, 40 years ago? Because the house you see in the film, as you know, I don't want to give too much away, but yeah, he had another.
It's quite dramatic. The whole it's not just an exploration of artistic process, your film. It's actually, because it's real, like it's in real time and real place, and they're your neighbours and people you know.
That's right, yeah. Quite personal. There could have been parties here, and there's footage from parties and things that we've done here over the years, and I've helped Wonga out repairing and doing work, as have seen the film many other people.
Yeah, the other people are fantastic as well. I really love the guy that house. I'd love to go and see that house that he's put all the jokes. Yeah, the jokes he's put into his house.
Yeah, Steve Curry in Hillsville. Yeah, he's a funny guy. Like, see, again, these are all friends of mine. I've been so lucky that the only person who wasn't a crew was Guy Feldman, but Sue Dolman and Steve Curry, both close friends of mine, I've known for a long time, and I just happen to know these crazy artists who make these crazy houses. So it's like, so when I started with Bob, I thought, I know a few other artists like Bob, you know, just luckily enough. And then so, yeah. And Stuke, yeah, he's amazing. He used to have an antique shop and things like that. So over many, many years, he's like a bowerbird who collected many, many different things from, you know, and, building sites and things like that, and was able. So a lot of that house, I think he said it's about 95% recycled material.
Yeah, he did. But also, yeah, it's really...
It's quite impressive, the way you put it together. It's an amazing amount of work. Like, one thing with Stupa, that I've said this before at the Q&A, is that, like, I feel, like, really lazy compared to Steve Curry and Boinga Bob and Sue Dolman and Guy Felt and the amount of work that they've done in there. And Boinga did it twice, you know, in their lifetime. And, you know, compared to just, you know, making a documentary.
I made a place in Alaska. Physically hard. I built a place in Alaska as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
On an island.
Oh.
Up with all the humpback whales and grizzly bears, dolphins and eagles, living on an island in Alaska.
Well, people have to go and see the film because it does actually explore creative impulse. Because, I mean, not everybody understands sculpture, and that's what you've made, isn't it, Bob? You've yeah. made a sculpture, but it's a living sculpture.
Well, I felt my heart, my inner voice. I felt it, know my feelings.
Yeah, that's right. It's quite extraordinary, actually. And as a, I mean, if we go on to the other film, which is Deep Ecology, it strikes me that you are a filmmaker that seeks out a good story, as it were. Is that right?
Well, yeah, but the Deep Ecology one, I was skeptical of making that one because, as you've seen it, it's so intimate.
Yeah, very.
And I cried editing it. There was times when I'd come to tears editing it, you know, and I still do when I watch it again because it's so, in a way, that's so beautiful about people's compassion for the earth and you know, in that intimate space that they're in without giving too much away. The Deep Ecology workshop.
Well, it's actually very important.
I mean, coming to film it was like, really, yeah. It took a while to set up and get people who were okay for that to be filmed. And
that's what I was going to ask you, because it's terribly intimate. And
yes, totally.
To get people to, as a filmmaker, to actually allow people to feel comfortable enough for you to be there with the camera. But in a way, they forget you were there?
Yeah, because a lot of everyone in that film were quite experienced deep ecologists and had been to many workshops before, so it wasn't like their first time at a truth mandala sort of thing. So, everyone who wanted to be a part of it was fine with that sort of thing, yeah. But it was, it was just a very deep film.
Well, it is, but also people could be sceptical in a sense, and so you don't disassociate yourself from the film. You become a narrator in a sense.
Absolutely. But I give my own truth mandala in it. Yeah, exactly. I felt like, and because, like I said, from my very first film, it's always been ecologically minded, and it's still to this day, and so the Deep Ecology is part of that, and even I think that comes across in Stuart as well.
Yeah, it does come across. It's a fascinating film, and he's a fascinating filmmaker. As I said, it's available for you to see on Tuesday, the 22nd of July at Nova at 6:15. The other films I was talking to you about, Hot Water and the Motua Fitzroy River film, is on tonight at 6:15, and Stupa is on at 9:15. You could have a real feast of film at Nova tonight if you wanted to. Coming up next is Published or Not. We're going to go out with Olive Knight, My Country.
Yeah. Sitting down here, thinking about blah, the country. Sitting down here, thinking about blah, country. Something but wait, love me. Something but wait, love me. Crook and ganja, no good one, mangare, and borrow white lami. Crook and ganja, no good one, mangare, borrow white lami. My, not thinking about good way and clean. Not thinking about a good way and clean. I gotta get up and go back to my country. I gotta get up and go back to my country. Not gonna let him bad grog and ganja. No good one, Mari, but why love me? not gonna let him bow. Grog and ganja, no good one, mangare, but away, love me.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.